from Luke chapter 4. And he came to Nazareth, where he'd been brought up. And he went into the synagogue, as his custom was on the Sabbath day. And he stood up to read, and it was given to him the book of the prophet Isaiah. He opened the book and found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives, and the recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord." And he closed the book and gave it back to the attendant and sat down, and the eyes of all in the synagogue were fixed upon them. And he began to say to them, "Today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." He told his hometown folks that he was there to fulfill the prophecy. I had a test in my freshman class this last Tuesday, and it was over the unit that specifically focuses on issues of diversity, stratification, issues related to differences and distinctions by race and ethnicity, age, and gender. And I always have my TAs construct two versions of the test so that people sitting next to each other actually have a different version, etc. Well, as I always do, I told them to make half the test, or make one version pink and the other half, well, the other version blue. And as I was passing out the tests, since it was the diversity unit, I said, "We apparently have boy tests and girl tests. And the girl tests are way easier." I always make that same lame joke, and everybody rolls their eyes and chuckles a little bit. And on we go. Well, I get an email later in the day from one of the students, and he said, "I know you were just making a joke, but I wonder," he said in the email, "I wonder if there's something to that. If you told the people that the pink tests were easier, and the girls who got a pink test, did they perform better or worse, etc." And he wasn't very articulate about it. But what he was, in effect, referring to, which just so happens to be a topic for this coming Tuesday's lecture, is the self-fulfilling prophecy. Standard fare in introductory psychology. What you tell yourself about yourself becomes true about you. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You can tell yourself all manners of things, but build yourself up, bring yourself down. So I wrote the kid back and I said, "You know, all I'm trying to teach you how to do is to take an idea and apply the logic of that idea to another question and raise the issue for further inquiry." And you did exactly that. He got it right. And I was pleased. Self-fulfilling prophecy. What do we tell ourselves about ourselves, and to what effect? I was thinking about that this week in a couple of different ways. There's a piece that CNN had on its website just yesterday. 5 stories of truly amazing people. CNN was telling the world that these 5 people were amazing. Well, we can all tell ourselves that. We can tell each other, "You're amazing." And these people, the stories, perhaps you've heard the police officer that caught a shoplifter and instead of arresting the shoplifter, bought $100 worth of groceries, and both of their lives have been changed and they're all over the internet and so on. A woman was hiking in the mountains and found a pit bull that had been shot a few times and carried this pit bull far down the mountain. And the story of the waiter in Kansas who, instead of a tip, got a particularly hateful note from a couple of customers about his lifestyle, and then the response to that has been rather amazing in terms of support for etc. Right? People that were doing what CNN at least called amazing. I had a particularly edgy lecture to give on Thursday, first unit in this next segment. And I always have a little bit of anxiety before this comes through. It's a family values lecture and all that. Sometimes it lands well. Sometimes I nail the presentation. Sometimes one or the other doesn't happen. This last Thursday, I really nailed it, and it landed at least well enough such that I got 2 or 3 emails from students telling me how much they appreciated what I had said, how unusual they thought it was, And after one of the lectures in one of the classes, a guy came up and rather emotionally told me that he hadn't expected to hear that and how grateful he was and that, etc. So I'm going, I'm apparently amazing. And of course, we do that. I mean, you know, we should tell ourselves that because it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. And we become more amazing the more we hear it until we don't. Because you can hear that and tell yourself that so often such that, well, your ego kind of starts to get in the way and you trip over the part of yourself that's not so terribly amazing. Which happened yesterday, as it turns out. I shouldn't have done it. I really shouldn't have. I went to a presbytery meeting. It was a specially called presbytery meeting over a contentious issue. And it's the same contentious issue that has been contending the Presbyterian Church for 15 years. It was just the latest iteration of a family values issue that has been driving me insane and really bringing out, in some respects, the very worst in me. And the newest iteration of this has to do with the location of property when churches want to leave, and it's all about money and power in addition to goofy family values, and you don't need the details. But I stopped going to presbytery meetings mostly when this whole flap started 10 or 15 years ago. I go when I have to, or when somebody puts a gun to my head, or if I actually have something I need to do. And I have changed my thinking on why that is just recently, just within this last week. My early thinking on it had been that I was actually boycotting presbytery meetings because I was just tired of dealing with an issue that doesn't need to be dealt with, in my opinion. And I said, it's a boycott because of what they're doing. And I've changed my thinking on why I don't go much and why I shouldn't go and why I really shouldn't have gone yesterday, because it brings out the very worst in me. It brings out a part of myself that I have difficulty living with. And I left the meeting yesterday after spending way too long, after having gotten up and spoken and said way too much. And I got home, and I wasn't feeling well anyway, and I just felt like I needed to de-louse myself because I was pathetic. You know, that's the other thing we tell ourselves. You're amazing. You're pathetic. And that's kind of true. I was pretty pathetic yesterday. I felt like I couldn't get out of my own way. And the worst part about it is I know I'm right on this. And I was having trouble sleeping last night for all kinds of reasons, and I'm in the middle of one of those bouts of being awake, and I'm redoing, you know, what it is I want to say to you right now in this segment of the piece, and I started to feel pathetic all over again. So I picked up a book and read it for a while, and here we are. You're amazing. You're pathetic. And we are. Sometimes at the same time, right? Well, here's the interesting part. Jesus is in his hometown, and this is right in the section where he says a prophet is not without honor in his own country. In other words, to his own people, he's kind of pathetic in some ways, and to others, perfectly amazing. But it's the Isaiah piece that is intriguing. He sent me to proclaim release to the captives. Well, that was a different time and place, and this is a group of Jews that are under they're in occupied Roman territory. They are in effect enslaved. Well, good news to the captives to them meant something different than what it might mean to us. To set at liberty those who are oppressed. Well, I don't know about you, but I felt captive and oppressed rattling around inside my own head when I feel pathetic. And it doesn't take very long, even when I'm amazing, for it to loop back. So you go into these circles, right? Jesus has come to set us free. He's come to set us free with the third self-fulfilling prophecy. You're amazing, and you become more so. You're pathetic, and you become more so. And you're worth it. That's the essence of the gospel. You're both and, either or, mixed up together, and you're worth it. You're worth the trouble. You're worth all it took to go to the cross, the tomb, and back, And if you don't believe me, ask Zacchaeus. You ever been up a tree? Rattling around inside your own head because you know you're pathetic. And Jesus, interestingly enough, said to Zacchaeus what he says to us every week. Let's have a meal. And you're forgiven. The woman at the well, 5 husbands in all, you know. She knew how pathetic she seemed to others. She lied to Jesus and said, I don't have a husband. And that was the truth, but it wasn't the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And Jesus knew it. And he said, here's the amazing part. Go back to your hometown in another country, and the woman at the well becomes among the first foreign missionaries and converts her whole town. She's amazing. And then there's St. Peter, you know, who is as pathetic and amazing all at the same time as any human being there ever was, and Jesus never gives up on him. There's Thomas. He never gives up on Thomas, and I think he wouldn't have given up on Judas if Judas had lived long enough, and I expect the two of them had a rather interesting reunion at Jesus' ascension. Yeah, who knows? Who knows otherwise? We are pathetic. We are amazing. And by the grace of God, and for no other reason than he simply decided it so, you're worth it. The next time you need to tell yourself something to get your foot ahead of the next one, try that. Let it be a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're worth it.